talking to me?
Funny like I'm a clown, I use you.
Here's Johnny.
He's looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead. Make my day.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Good morning and welcome to the We Are Movie Geeks podcast. I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Jim Batts.
And today is March 14th. Let's just get right to business. We had a lot of movies to review and lots to talk about. But what happened at the box office over the weekend, Michelle?
Here are the official worldwide weekend box estimates from ComScore. At number one was Zootopia with $50 million. Dropped off only 33%.
That's pretty impressive. I thought they'd be in the top three, but not number one again.
So. Yeah, and $50 million. The animated feature has earned $142.6 million in ticket sales in the U.S. and is now the highest grossing Disney animation flick ever. At number two is 10 Cloverfield Lane with an impressive $25 million. Estimates have the production cost at $13 million, so that's a good return.
Yeah, I wonder how many theaters it was on. 2,100, something like that?
The J.J. Abrams-produced film opened at 3,391 cinemas.
I saw it Saturday night over at the Galaxy Mega Screen.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And it was pretty crowded.
Yeah. Number three is Deadpool with $10.8 million, down just 35%.
Mm-hmm. Still pretty good. Boy, it's got some legs on it.
Deadpool delivered another $10 million. It now stands at $328 million total, passing the original Iron Man and Transformers. London Has Fallen is number four with $10.6 million. The Gerard Butler sequel has brought in $69 million in worldwide sales.
Good. I like that movie.
I do too. Number five was Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, added $4.6 million, giving it a total of $14.5 million to date. And number six is The Perfect Match. Lionsgate's romance picture bowed in 925 locations to $4.2 million
Perfect
for the weekend.
Match. I don't even know what that is.
Oh, that is an urban rom-com.
Mm-hmm.
It stars the young man. Used to be on the E! Channel, I believe. Mm-hmm. Terrence is his first name, mm-hmm. I think. But he's been in those, Steve Harvey based movies.
Correct.
There. Okay, What Women Want.
No, oh, okay. That. I know what you're talking
Think
about.
Like a Man.
Think Like a Man.
Yeah, that's right.
And Think Like a Man, too.
Okay. Yeah.
So, Focus features faith based movie The Young Messiah, debuted at number seven to $3.4 million in 1,700 locations.
So, number six and number seven, they wouldn't show to us, for mm-hmm. goodness sakes.
And number eight as well.
Oh, my.
Coming in at number eight is Sony's spy comedy, The Brothers Grimsby. The
Which movie, I saw.
Yeah.
Didn't do very well, though.
No. The movie opened to a dismal $3.2 million from 2,000-plus locations, which begs the question, with another flop, is Sacha Baron Cohen still bankable?
Mm,
at number nine is Lionsgate's Gods of Egypt with $2.5 million. The film is playing well overseas, has a total of $107 million worldwide.
Yeah, you know, considering that probably cost about $200 million to make, I think that Lionsgate's going to take a little bit of a bath on that one, I think.
The Christian-themed film Risen is number 10 with $2.2 million. The Revenant takes the 11th spot with $2 million. The Oscar-winning film now has a global total of $356 million. And rounding out the 12 is Kung Fu Panda 3. The third chapter of Poe and his adventures from 20th Century Fox brought in $1.6 million. So opening next weekend is the Divergent series Allegiant. The film opened this weekend with $26.7 million from 45 territories, ahead of its North American release coming this Friday. Sony Picture Classics, The Bronze, also opens this coming Friday. Eye in the Sky with Helen Mirren and Alan Rickman in one of his final roles. And Hello, My Name is Doris, starring Sally Field. Followed by Batman Superman Dawn of Justice, Friday, March 25th.
Is Eye in the Sky open wide, or is that just a hit?
I think
limited.
It's wide. It is limited. I'm surprised. I've seen a lot of TV ads for it. Yeah.
All right.
So, Big Fat Greek Wedding 2 opens on the 25th also, doesn't
mm-hmm.
it?
Yeah. I was just more Batman Superman.
Well, sure.
Oh, no.
Sure.
Oh, no. We're much more looking forward to the Big Fat Greek Wedding. When was that?
Wasn't
that like 20 years ago?
That was like 12 years or 15 years ago, something like that.
Talk to somebody who loves the original, and they are just so stoked about the sequel. Okay. So,
I never saw the original.
Neither did I. But I know it made tons of money.
Yeah, and she was nominated for writing that.
Yeah, she was.
I can't even think of her name. name.
I think it's Nia
Vardalos.
Yeah, I think for a while it was like the highest grossing independent produced movie ever, or something like that.
Crazy, man. Yeah. Crazy. All right, we got a lot of movies to review. Look at this lineup: Other Side of the Door, Eye in the Sky, Brothers Grimm, Creative Control, 10 Cloverfield Place, Miracles from Heaven, and The Bronze. We got to review all those movies today. We're going to get busy, so let's get started. Mm. Michelle, did you see 10 Cloverfield Place?
I did.
You did?
Boy.
Let's start with that. That was number two over the weekend. It did pretty well, 25.2 million. Jim Batts reviewed it at WeAreMovieGeeks.com and gave it 4.5 out of 5 stars. That's quite a positive review there.
No! Don't open that door! They're going to get all of us killed!
Something's coming.
I thought it worked.
What'd you like about it so much?
It just had me on the edge of my seat for most of it. I can say it almost, you know, would be claustrophobic, but they saved the claustrophobia for the vent crawling scene, which just had me, you know, grabbing the arm of my chair. Mm-hmm. I thought Mary Elizabeth Winstead, I've liked her in everything since Smashed, and she's a really strong heroine in this, but the best element of the film is definitely St. Louis's own John Goodman.
Yeah. You don't know what's going on with him. You know, he's full of surprises.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he's got like a hair trigger. He can be really sweet. You think he's going to explode at you, and then he does it. And then for the least little thing, he just goes maniac.
Yeah, and you don't know if he's really a survivalist or he's just a wacko or if he's telling the truth or he's making it up. It's really a cleverly written character and perfectly cast, Mr. Goodman.
And he's doing, you know, Howard is his name, and he's doing this passive aggressive thing through a lot of, I think you ought to be a little more grateful to me, you know.
The film is riveting from beginning to end, and it's so tense because of Bear McCreary's score. It's tingling. And he does the score for The Walking Dead.
Almost hits the points too hard at times.
I thought the music a little loud.
But then he'll even off and back off, which is good. So, but it, you know, he was kind of on the tightrope between being too bombastic at times.
That's what made it just more scary.
But a lot of controversy about the ending of it, which I guess we shouldn't reveal. But
why not?
Does tie it in a little bit more to Cloverfield, and a lot of people had some problems with that ending when I saw this press reading of it. But it doesn't ruin the rest of it if you do have a problem with it. If you don't have a problem with it, that's just a nice little icing on the cake.
You gave it 4.5. I don't think I would have given it quite that high a score. I was a little let down with the final chapter of the film. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't want to give it away, but to me it wasn't totally satisfying.
You're talking about like the last 10 minutes or so,
yeah, the last
right?
10 or 15 minutes.
Yeah.
It was kind of like Room with aliens.
Well, a little bit of Room, a little bit of Misery. A little bit of The Collector in there. But I thought it worked. I really enjoyed. Oh, we forgot to mention John Gallagher Jr. as Emmett, and he's a very entertaining character. And there's a sequence with him that is just so shocking that you're just kind of dumbfounded there, stunned for a few seconds. And he's a very entertaining character. He talks about wishing he had gotten a tattoo, and that's a very funny sequence.
It's really good film.
It's strong. And say Mary Elizabeth, she's terrific as usual. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I saw it Saturday. When did you see it, Michelle?
I saw it yesterday, as a matter of fact.
I took my 12-year-old daughter, who had never seen a horror film on the big screen. She had seen House on Haunted Hill, but not a contemporary horror film on the big screen. I think the scariest scene for her was when, maybe 30 minutes in, where this other woman parks outside. And is banging on the shelter trying to get in. That's a pretty scary scene. Mm-hmm. And that was the one scene where I kind of looked over at my daughter and she was covering her face and cowering under her seat.
That's good.
Yeah, that is a great scene, I tell you. Mm-hmm. That is really good. Mm-hmm. That, and I was cowering, where somebody needs to get stitches in the film. And I was like, I don't want to see that.
That didn't bother her. All right, so Jim and Michelle and I all recommend 10 Cloverfield Place. Let's move along. Eye in the Sky. Let's talk about Eye in the Sky.
What's happening?
We're seeing a suicide vest and a whole bunch of explosives.
What's the plan, General?
We have the ability to strike a target with considerable accuracy.
I came here to witness a capture, not a targeted assassination.
Dozens of lives are at stake if these men leave.
We need to put a hellfire through that roof right now.
Weapon is armed.
What's that?
Given the new circumstances, I think we should abort.
Jim saw Eye in the Sky last week at a screening. That opens Friday. Jim, you're going to be reviewing that?
No, I believe Kate is.
Kate is.
Yes, I think
well,
so.
Well, were you to be reviewing it, what kind of review would you give it?
I would give it a very positive review. I think I might give it 4 or 4.5 also. I guess I'm just being too generous, but I think this is a really good, high-quality film. It's from director Gavin Hood, the South African actor-turned-director, who gave us, he actually got an Oscar in 2006 for Tsotsi.
Street kids.
Yeah, street kids and carjackings and things like that. And then he came to Hollywood and did X-Men Origins Wolverine and Ender's Game. So he's not the best track record since hitting the big leagues, but I think he's back on track with this one.
Ender's Game was pretty good.
Yeah, I would look forward to a sequel to that, I tell you. But yeah, this one has some great, very strong performances that really, the center of it is Helen Mirren as a British colonel, and it's all about the terrorist activity going on in Nairobi and parts of Africa. And it does mention that that big mall shootout from a few years ago, and British and American forces have combined to take on the terrorist groups there. She is determined to take down some of the leaders of this, including this British woman named Susan Danford, who was joined the cult and is one of the big masterminds. And for Helen Mirren's character, Colonel Powell, this Danford character is almost like Moriarty or, even Moby Dick. She wants to bring her to justice or destroy her. It centers around the activity in Nairobi, and they cut back between Helen Mirren's character in the British forces and their sort of underground headquarters. Alan Rickman's character, this is a wonderful sort of swan song. I know he does one of the voices on the next Alice in Wonderland entry, but I guess this is probably going to be his last screen appearance, and he plays another British Lieutenant General Benson, and he's meeting with the Prime Minister in a secret meeting room, and they're communicating with Helen Mirren, and they find out that the Stanford and some of the other big wigs in the terrorist cell are meeting. They finally discover they're there, and Helen wants to go in with drones and destroy them. They say, well, we really want them captured, but that's really not an option. Now, the thing is, though, there's a lot of activity around this compound, and they're afraid that if the drone does strike the house, that the kill zone will take out some civilians. And they're mostly concerned about this little girl that's right next to the wall where the terrorists are meeting, and she's selling bread, and there's a big controversy. Well, should we strike? Well, if we don't, these terrorists will go out and kill dozens of people. They're coordinating efforts in America, actually in Las Vegas, with Aaron Paul, who plays Steve Watts, who's who's an American soldier who's manning the drones, and he has the final word on the kill order. And when he sees the girl, he doesn't want to go in. And there's a lot of a debate about collateral damage and what's legal. And Jeremy Northam plays the PM, and he's sort of passing the buck. And he's like, well, I don't know if this is legal. Let's contact the Americans. There's a nice cameo by a couple of American actors. I don't want to give it away. And it's really, really well done.
It sounds suspenseful, is it?
Yeah, it's very. It keeps you you're waiting. Little girl, get out of there. You're kind of holding on to your edge of your seat there.
So what happens at the end? Do they blow her up?
Well, I am not going to say, but helping the U.S. and British forces is Barkhad Abdi, young actor that was one of the captain. I am the captain now from Captain Phillips.
And he's in Brothers Grimsby as well.
That's what I understand.
Mm-hmm. Big weekend for that guy. What's his name?
Barkhad Abdi, and it's nice to see him again. I haven't seen him in anything since Captain Phillips.
One of my favorite actors.
Yeah. So I would highly recommend the movie here. Eye in the Sky have people debating for a while. It's a pretty tense, taut thriller.
All right. Well, Jim highly recommends Eye in the Sky. I am going to review Other Side of the Door.
Life's lost meaning.
What if I could bring your son back to you just one more time so that you could say your final goodbye? There's an abandoned temple. It is said that the door of the temple is the key to the world of the dead.
Other Side of the Door was a horror film that sort of snuck into theaters last weekend. Jim said, hey, there's a new horror movie in town last Monday. So, of course, I had to go see it. It was really good. I'm glad I did. It stars Sarah Callis. I believe is her name. She was the mom on Walking Dead. They killed her off a couple of seasons ago.
The late, great Lori.
Yeah. And aside, I noticed Walking Dead is the only TV show I watch. I saw The Boy, and it had another actress
yes,
from Walking
Maggie,
Dead.
Yes, Maggie. Lauren Cohen.
Yeah, yep. And then this is the second movie I've seen Sarah Callis in. The other one was Into the Storm. And these actresses look prettier and younger on the big screen than they do on TV. Mm-hmm. Has anybody ever noticed that, or is that just sort of a phenomenon?
Well, they have to grime them up and dirty them up for Walking
Dead.
True, that's
but they look thinner and they look younger. Yeah. I mean, she gets pretty grimed up in this movie. Oh, well, that's kind of off the subject. This is a movie, Other Side of the Door, is about an American couple who are living in Mumbai, India, because her husband, played by Jeremy Sisto, is there for his job, and they have two children, a little boy who's maybe, six, and a little girl who's a year or two older. And she gets in this car accident where her car slides off a bridge into a lake. And as the car is sinking, and she has to make the choice, kind of like Sophie's choice, my son or my daughter, which one can I save? She doesn't have time to save them both. So she saves the little girl. The little boy drowns, and she's just haunted and feels terrible and can't sleep and attempts suicide, et cetera, et cetera. And this Indian woman who is her maid tells her that she knows of this temple out in the woods, that if she digs up her son, has him cremated, spreads his ashes next to the door at this temple, that she can talk to him through the door and say her final goodbyes and say how sorry she is for not saving him. And of course she takes her up on this offer. So they dig the boy up, and she does this, although they tell her, whatever you do, don't open the door. No matter what the little boy says, don't open the door. So you can guess what happens there. She does it, and the little boy starts. He goes, Mommy, I'm so scared. It's dark in here. Mommy, open the door. No. And she's like, no, I can't. He goes, Mommy. Of course she opens the door. And then the little boy's ghost follows her back to her home. And it's kind of like Pet Sematary, except in Pet Sematary.
Yes.
Well, the kid was a zombie in Pet Sematary. This kid's a ghost.
Or like Monkey's Paw or something.
Yeah, it's actually really good. Good. I mean, it's really scary. I like the way it takes place in Mumbai, and there's a lot of shots, driving around in Mumbai. You see a lot of the city, and the different location gives it sort of a different feel. It's derivative of a lot of horror movies like we just saw, but I think the fact that it takes place in India, if they set it in New England or something, it would have seemed a little more derivative than it is. This actress, Sarah Callis, is quite good. It's kind of a heartbreaking ghost story, but it hits all the right notes. It's not particularly violent. I'm not even sure why it's rated R. Maybe because it's so devastating, and it's pretty scary. So I do highly recommend The Other Side of the Door.
Yeah, why would they show it to us, for goodness sakes?
I don't know. It's a really good horror movie.
Sounds like it's better than The Forest, that's for sure.
It's better than The Forest. It's been a good year for horror movies so far. If you think about it, The Witch has been an outstanding horror film. 10 Cloverfield Place was really good. And now this, that's three horror movies in less than 3 months.
Well, you like The Boy, too, as I recall.
The Boy, yeah. This has been a very good year for horror movies. And The Other Side of the Door is still in town. I kind of thought it would only show 1 week, so I kind of raced out and saw it one night last week. But it's still here in town, so... try to check out The Other Side of the Door. Another movie that opens Friday is something called Creative Control. Jim saw Creative Control.
I had a vision that we could enhance real life with a magical lair in front of it. So this is our approach. We give a pair to a genius. We see what comes back. We might have a new art form on our hands.
Yeah, I did the other day. I enjoyed that. It's a low-budget indie. It's all set in Brooklyn. Yeah, I want to think it's set in the same time period as maybe the movie Her from a couple years ago with Joaquin Phoenix. It's in the future, but not too distant, and a lot of the technology in it is sort of close to what we have now. It's about a fellow that works in an ad agency, played by Benjamin Davidson, who's the co-writer and director of the film. He's having a tough time with his relationship with his girlfriend, whose name is Juliet, played by Nora Zediger. But he's kind of living vicariously through his buddy, Wim, who is a fashion photographer, always hooking up with models. He's played by a young actor named Dan Gill. But Wim has a girlfriend named Sophie, who's played by Alexa Rasmussen. The Benjamin Davidson character, David, kind of falls for her and finds her very interesting and is very attracted to her. Well, this is around the same time his ad agency gets a contract with a company called Augmented Reality, and they give him a special pair of glasses that are kind of like super Google glasses, and he's able to do his computer stuff through
them. Yeah, I ordered a pair of those through a comic book once when I was a kid.
Well, this kind of kicks into that a little bit, because he, with those glasses, he takes images and vocal recordings of the Sophie character and creates his own sort of avatar. So when he's alone, he can call up her image, and they sort of hook up. This doesn't help David's relationship with Juliet or his relationship with Wim, and he becomes obsessed with trying to hook up with the real Sophie, and she's not quite going for it. And the film is a little artsy. It's shot in black and white, but the avatar images are in color, which makes for kind of an interesting effect. But like I say, it's all around Brooklyn. A lot of hipster action in it. They always seem to be vaping or running around to some hip new eatery, and it's very entertaining. It's got a lot to say about technology and about being addicted to technology and about advertising itself, and a lot of drug use in it. They're always taking something to alleviate their stress. But it's a pretty interesting look at a not so distant future.
And you'll be reviewing this film, Creative Control?
Yeah, that'll open this Friday, yes.
And how many stars do you think you're going to be giving?
Oh, I think I'm probably going to give it 3, 3.5, something like that.
All right, so Jim recommends Creative Control. I am going to now review The Brothers Grimsby. Brothers Grimsby opened over the weekend and didn't do particularly well.
Finally, I can make things right. Nobby? Oh, my God.
Because of you, my shop was compromised.
A huge manhunt to find the rogue secret agent.
I'm gonna help.
Stay away from me.
Don't worry, brother. I won't leave you.
Don't worry, it's bulletproof.
You can't help us. We've got bulletproof glass.
They didn't show it to us. I can sort of understand why. It's about these two brothers named Nobby Butcher, played by Sacha Baron Cohen, and his younger brother, Sebastian Butcher, played by Mark Strong. Grimsby is actually the name of the town where they live. Their name isn't Grimsby. Sebastian is a MI6 agent, and Nobby is, we're not sure what Nobby is. He appears to be a soccer hooligan professionally, but he's a knucklehead. He has these mutton chop sideburns and these bad teeth and this sort of beer belly, and he's married to Rebel Wilson. And they have 12 kids, and they introduce their kids. One's name's Gangnam Style, one's name's Django Unchained, and then he says, and this is Luke. And the guy goes, Luke? And he goes, yeah, that's, we call him that because he has leukemia. It goes there in a lot of ways that a lot of comedies won't, as far as just pushing the envelope in terms of distastefulness. And there are jokes about AIDS. There's a whole running gag where you've got a child in a wheelchair where, you know, they're getting chased around, and they pick up the child in the wheelchair and they use him as a weapon and, like, throw him through the air at other people. They even throw a dog through the air. There's Donald Trump makes an appearance in the movie. These two brothers, they sort of had been separated, not at birth, but they had been separated as children, and Nobby's been looking for Sebastian for several years, and he finally hooks up with him and foils his attempt at stopping an assassination. So Sebastian goes on the lam, and Nobby tries to hide him, and then basically it's just a big chase. They're on the run from the MI6 agents trying to hunt him down, in a group of villains led by Penelope Cruz that try to hunt them down.
Penelope Cruz is in it. Oh my goodness, I had no idea.
Oh, and also that guy you just mentioned from Captain Phillips is in it. They go to Africa at one scene and another running gag is that Nobby has a thing for overweight women. He's supposed to seduce this skinny woman. And they said, look for the woman in the green dress. That's who you're supposed to seduce. So Gabory Sabade from Precious walks by in a green dress, and Nobby gets really excited and falls in love at first sight with Gabby Sabade. And there's a scene in bed between Nobby and Gabby Sabade with a point of view shot, which you just have to see to believe. I'm not going to go into the details. They're running around in Africa. There's jokes involving, how can I put it, elephant semen. I won't go any further than that, but it's really, really funny. This whole movie is stupid. It's juvenile, but it's only 82 minutes long. It's like they didn't try to padded out with a bunch of stuff that's not funny. It's all kind of highlights. It's really, really funny movie, if you like that kind of thing. It's kind of a, there's like one gut-bustingly politically incorrect scene after another. I like it a lot because I like that kind of stuff occasionally. Sometimes it's good to just throw political correctness out the window and just laugh. And if the movie wants to make you laugh, then so be it, because this one works. I recommend Brothers Grimsby.
And what's funny is the director, Louis Leterry, he did Now You See Me, Clash of the Titans, Incredible Hulk of 2008, both the first and second Transporter movies.
Yeah, it's a very well-made film. So, a lot of effects. And it doesn't look like a cheap movie. They sunk some money into it. There's a whole scene at a soccer stadium near the end that looks like they had to have corralled quite a few thousand extras.
So is Penelope better in this or in Zoolander 2?
This is a funnier movie than Zoolander 2.
So she's better in this. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, her part's not much bigger than. It's not a huge.
I question Mark Strong and his choice in this, though. But I.
Well, he plays it completely straight.
I'm sure he does. But I like Mark Strong. I just kind of cringe to think he's in this.
Yeah, he was so good in The Imitation Game last year as the spy. Sort
he's
of
phenomenal in everything.
Yeah. Well, this shows his range.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So, I recommend Brothers Grimsby. I don't think it's probably not going to be around a whole lot longer since it's not doing very well. So check it out and see it if that sounds like your cup of tea. What else can we review? How about The Bronze?
What needs to be the strongest for you to be a champion?
My body. My endurance. My mental constitution.
Your mind.
But I said my mental
Here's the deal, Twitchy. I'm the pilot. You're the...
Co-pilot. Got it.
I'm gonna say stewardess.
Well, well, well. Hope and Gregory. If you let Hope train Maggie, you'll be throwing your daughter's career out the window. I won gold and silver, and everyone's talking about your bronze.
It's men's gymnastics, which, come on, no one gives a crap about.
And The Bronze opens Friday.
Yeah.
That is starring Melissa
Rauch.
And written by Melissa Rauch and her husband, Winston Rauch.
Yes.
It's the story of a... How old is she supposed to be? Like 19, maybe?
Well, I think now...
19 or 20?
Well, I think, maybe she's about 20 or 24 right now.
Oh, okay.
Maybe 25.
And she lives in a small town in Ohio, and she was a bronze-winning Olympic medalist 5 or 6 years earlier in life. And so she is sort of the town celebrity. She gets to go to Sbarro and eat for free, and she has her own parking spot.
The city limits signs say, home of Hope Annabelle Gregory.
Yeah.
But she's kind of a takeoff of Carrie Strug. You remember? I believe she was the gymnast that was carried by her her coach, and there was a big drama about that.
Yeah, and also injury. Of course Tonya Harding. There's hairstyle she wears is just like what Tonya Harding was doing 20 years ago. But she's a real spoiled brat, and she's reliving her 15 minutes of fame when she had won the bronze. She hadn't accomplished anything else. It opens with her watching her old tapes and sort of pleasuring herself while she's doing so. And she lives with her dad, played by Gary Cole, and he's a mailman, and he's a widowed fella, and he spoils the heck out of his daughter. And she repays him by like going into his mail truck and stealing money out of gift cards that
birthday
cards
finds. And things.
And her old coach passes away and leaves a stipulation in her will that says if Hope trains this young 16-year-old that also lives in this town to go to the Olympics, she will leave her $500,000 in her will. And they need the money because her father's given her $500 a week allowance and struggling to make ends meet a little bit. And she doesn't want to, of course. But eventually she does, and I'm making it sound more conventional than it is. This is a really nasty character.
I always wanted to call this bad Santa gymnast, pretty much, because the Hope character is so unpleasant and abusive the start of it. And you mentioned Gary Cole. He is so
brilliant.
Funny in it. He's really good.
And the relationship between her and her father, there's a lot of depth to that relationship. It's not just a goofy comedy. I mean, there's one line that really stuck with me where she says, "Quit bugging me. I don't ask you how your day went." And he says, "I wish you would ask me how my day went." I mean, as the father of a couple of teenagers myself, I could totally relate to this thing where your kids don't really want to have anything to do with you. Unfortunately, she sort of takes that to the next level, just constantly belittling him and cussing him out. And then there's another really funny character who's twitchy.
Yes, Ben Twitch Lawford. He's played by Thomas Middleditch. from I believe he's on the Silicon Valley show or Silicon Valley show on HBO.
Yeah,
but yeah, he's very funny. He sort of manages the gymnastics training gymnasium or whatever.
And he's got a physical facial twitch, and she says, "Oh, twitchy," and that's what we used to call you, twitchy. And he says, "Well, actually, you're the only person that ever called me twitchy." then old Bucky, I think, is in it as well.
Yeah, he plays sort of
the rival coach.
Yeah, Sebastian Stan plays Lance Tucker.
Yeah, and he was a gold-winning
Olympic
gymnast. But she says, you know, who cares about men's gymnastics?
That's right.
But this is a really funny, dark, dark movie. And we set how unsympathetic she is. Yeah, on the likable meter from 1 to 10, she starts out at about a 0. And, you know, you sort of expect her to be likable and redemptive by the end of the movie. And she does move up that meter a bit, maybe to about a 3.
At the end of the human being territory, yes.
But like I say, I'll be reviewing this movie, and I'm going to give it a very positive review. I think it's sort of brilliantly written by Miss Rauch and her husband. I interviewed Melissa Rauch last weekend. Look for that at wearemoviegeeks.com later this week. There's also, we should talk about the sex scene, because it's probably the best sex scene of the year.
It's pretty wild,
It's a gymnastic sex scene. Of course, my first question from Miss Rauch was that a body double? And she said, indeed it was.
Because it's not only the nudity, but it's gymnastics.
Yeah.
You know, they're throwing each other around that room with a lot of force and fury, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's a fun movie.
I
highly recommend The Bronze.
Yeah, another politically incorrect comedy.
Oh, definitely. Oh my gosh, we are almost done. Oh, I still have to review Miracles from Heaven.
Mommy, I'm coming. Mommy, it hurts.
Oh no, baby. When Anna got sick, I just couldn't understand it. Why was this loving little girl going through this?
I think your daughter is lactose intolerant,
acid reflux.
Everything looks okay.
Everything's fine.
Everything is not fine. There's something wrong with our little girl.
Mrs. B, you need
some
to calm
tests.
Down.
I'm not leaving this hospital until I know what's wrong with my daughter.
Oh, yeah, how was that?
Miracles from Heaven, it was pretty good. Miracles from Heaven is a Christian-based faith film. From the director of, I can't think of her name, she's a Mexican director, and she did The 33.
I'm blanking on that,
Rosemary.
Too.
Look that up.
Yep.
It's about this woman and her daughter who is 10 years old. Oh, she gets these horrible abdominal cramps, and so she rushes her to the doctor, and she's misdiagnosed at first. At first they say, oh, she's lactose intolerant, and then another doctor diagnoses her with something else incorrectly, and it just keeps getting worse and worse. Finally, they take her to a specialist who says, oh, no, her entire intestinal system is in bad shape, and she can't digest food properly, so this poor kid, her stomach gets distended, and she has to eat food through a tube that runs down her nose, and they take her to a specialist in Boston, and he does the best he can, but eventually they say, well, she's not really reacting the way we were hoping she was. Just take her home and just make her as comfortable as she can, because she's not going to survive. And it's really, really sad. But then one day when she's home very sick, she's out climbing a tree with one of her sisters, and they're up near the top of the tree, and there's a hole in the tree because the tree is hollow, and she falls in this hole and falls 30 feet to the bottom of this tree. You know, the fire trucks come, and there's this long scene where they're trying to extract her from the bottom of this tree without her being injured, and they pull her out. Miraculously, not only is she not injured from this fall, but her intestinal disease is gone, and her stomach isn't distended anymore, and she's healthy and happy. And so everybody goes to church and thanks Jesus, the end. Now, sounds like I just gave it sort of a spoilerific review, and I did, but everything I just described is in the trailer.
Yeah, Queen Latifah, is she like the supportive friend of Jennifer Garner
or something? Well, you know, it's such a downbeat story that they need a little levity, so they bring in Queen Latifah. Yeah, she has to go to Boston. She lives in Texas. She has to go to Boston every month to meet with this specialist, so she meets this waitress played by Queen Latifah, and after like 90 seconds of talking, Queen Latifah's like, hey, why don't we go in my car and I'll give you a tour of Boston, which it seems a little far-fetched that a conservative woman from Texas would just find herself hanging out with this black woman that she's known for a whole 1 minute. But it's a movie. And Queen Latifah's car is, you know, beat up and backfires, and people laugh at that. It's kind of a character that has nothing to do with the plot, but it is some badly needed levity. And
the director
humor.
Is Patricia Riggin, by
Patricia
the way.
Patricia Riggin, okay.
Who did The 33.
But this is there's nothing wrong with this movie. I like that it knows its Christian audience well. The Christian crowd that's likely to make this something of a hit is just going to walk out of this movie with big smiles on their faces, believing that God cured this child. And that's great. It's actually a pretty good movie. I enjoyed it. Jennifer Garner is really, really good in the lead. I mean, her character is really run through the ringer. She has to display a lot of different kinds of emotions throughout the film, and she's quite good. I can't think of an actor who plays her husband. That's a little more of a thankless role.
Martin Henderson.
Yeah, because he's back at home with the other two daughters, and there's financial problems that they're having, although they're probably not now because she wrote a book on this, and now the book's got a movie deal, so something tells me that this family's doing okay financially. It's very, very similar to a movie we saw a couple years ago called Heaven Is For Real. And it's probably a little better made than that. It's probably directed with a little more style and art. I think I liked Heaven Is For Real a little bit more because it had Greg Kinnear, and Kinnear is a really good actor and probably, at least for me, more of a relatable actor. But this movie is really good. I suspect it's going to do well. It's going to open next Wednesday, which is the weekend a few days before Easter, and the Easter audiences are likely to make it a hit. And there's nothing wrong with the film. I think some critics are going to be skeptical of it, but it's not made for critics. And these face-based films, ever since Sony bought the studio, they're starting to show them to critics in advance. They used to not show them to us.
Yeah.
But the quality's
gotten better.
Yeah, this is written by the guy who wrote, I can't think of his name, but he wrote Trouble with the Curve for Clint Eastwood a couple of years ago, which was a good screenplay. It's well written. It's well acted. It's well shot. It's a little Norman Rockwell inspired in its art direction, but I think I think the Christian audiences like that and they're going to eat it up.
Well, good for Jennifer Garner. I mean, considering she's coming off the the big split from Ben Affleck, so good for her career. Good.
Yeah,
isn't she
a born again Christian or something? Seems like she'd be doing a lot of these family projects.
Yeah.
So look for my positive review of the uplifting Miracles from Heaven, and I'll be posting that, I guess, Tuesday night over at WeAreMovieGeeks.com. Wait, there's one more movie we have to review.
Oh, my goodness.
There's not seven movies we have to review this week. There are eight. There's something, something Sally Field that Jim saw last week. Doris.
I saw it.
Called?
Yeah, hello, my name is Doris a few weeks ago.
I hope I don't end up like one of those weirdo New Yorkers that chokes on a peanut and dies and no one even misses me.
Honey, I would miss you.
Get in the slow lane, ladies.
She gave us the finger, Ross. Fascist. Give her the finger.
Fascist! You go eat some kale.
Yeah, you better run.
This kind of does for Sally Field what I'll See You in My Dreams did for Blythe Danner last year. It provides a really nice, warm, romantic comedy for an actress of a certain age. This is, if you're a fan of Sally Field's, I highly recommend it. She is the title character, Doris.
Who's not a fan of Sally Field? Right. Come on.
Because we really love her. We really do.
We do. We really love her at
One of the
Movie
best
Geeks.
Speeches ever.
Co-writer and director of this is Michael Showalter. He was part of the comedy troupe The State, responsible for Wet Hot American Summer. And Showalter himself directed a nice little comedy a few years ago called The Baxter. Sally Field is Doris. She's a single woman living with her mother, and at the start of the film, her mother has passed away, and her brother, who's played by Stephen Root, is wondering what she's going to do. Is she going to move out of the house so that they can sell it and all that? But no, she insists she's going to stay there. She's more than a bit of a hoarder, so that's part of her story also. Follow her to her job. She's had a job in New York City for years, working for a fashion magazine, sort of a fashion catalog also. She's kind of not fitting in with these younger folks, but they're required because of contracts to have her there. And at first you think that maybe it's going to be, this movie's going to be sort of a female version of Being There, the old Peter Sellers film with this woman sort of being thrust out in the world. But then she meets the company's new art director, played by Max Greenfield. He's from the TV show The New Girl, playing a character called John. And Sally Field's Doris falls for him, and she's determined to be with him. And then...
Is he younger?
He is much younger. Okay. He's probably about half her age, at least.
What do they call that, a cougar, I believe?
Except Doris is anything but a cougar. She's always wearing two pairs of glasses, and she has an odd fashion style, a unique fashion style, I should say. But she's got a best pal, played by Tyne Daly, her pal Ross, who's very funny in the film, goes over to Roz's place for dinner and meets up with Roz's granddaughter, Isabel. And Isabel says, well, if you like this guy, we've got to find him on social media. So she does. She finds out what Max Greenfield's John's interests are, and she kind of pursues that. And the film is all about her wanting to be closer to this guy. She's sort of inspired early on by a motivational speaker who's played by Peter Gallagher in a very funny performance. And the film is very, very heartwarming and touching, but very, very funny. And like I say, if you're a fan of Sally Fields or Max Greenfield, it's a very entertaining film.
So you're reviewing this for WeMovieGeeks.com?
Yeah.
How many stars are you going to give it, Jim?
I'm going to give it four.
Four?
Wow. Yeah. Very nice.
All right. 4 out of 5 stars. Jim recommends. My name is Doris, but she's not a cougar. Let's talk about what's going on here in town. I saw Quiet Man over the weekend at the High Point.
Mm. Had a good crowd there, I hear.
They always have a big crowd. They always show the Quiet Man in March. Harry Hamm introduces the classic film series over there at the High Point and always does a good job. He had met Maureen O'Hara and always talks about his friendship with her. And he said that the High Point is going to start doing the Saturday Morning Classic Film Festival twice a month as opposed to once a month. So that's pretty exciting.
And they got limited to movies mostly from the 30s through the 60s, I
guess,
right?
Yeah, that's kind of what they do. They always get a good attendance. Also, locally, the Classic French Film Festival continues. This is the weekend for the Classic French Film Festival. I would go to all three of those, except I'm heading out of town on Sunday. Friday night is Diabolique, and I've seen Diabolique at the Webster University before. That is a classic from 1955.
That should have a big crowd.
Yeah, and that will be introduced by our friend Kathy Corley. That was directed by Georges-Henri Clouzot and stars Simone Signore and Clouzot's wife Vera Clouzot. It was a very inspirational film for Alfred Hitchcock, who wanted to direct it and was unable to and desperately sought out a project similar to it, which led to Psycho. So if it wasn't for Diabolique, there would not have been Psycho. It's very scary. Have you seen that before, Jim?
Ah, yes, I did. I think I saw little bits of the remake.
I like the remake.
Well, they remade it for American movies, mm-hmm. but they also did a TV remake, as I recall. Remake? I think with Joan Hackett, I think.
The remake has Sharon Stone. Remember, she's wearing that leopard print, tight-fitting dress throughout the film. And I think Isabella Gianni played the Vera Clouzot. Role.
More repressed woman, yeah. I guess. Yeah.
And then, but in the novel, they have a lesbian relationship, which is not in the Diabolique. And I can't remember if they have it, they get it on in the remake or not. I think Chaz Palminteri played the husband who they're trying to off. And then Saturday night is The Passion of Joan of Arc. You ever seen that, Jim?
No, I have not.
It was made in 1928. It's a silent film, and it stars a French stage actress named Falconetti, who was very famous, but this was the only film she made. It's considered to be one of the great silent film performances. Not to be confused with William Smith as Falconetti from The Rich Man, Poor Man.
That's right.
Miniseries from the 70s.
I've seen it. It's an interesting film. Is it?
It's almost two hours long.
It is.
And it's all about the trial of Joan of Arc, and I guess I predict it ends with the burning of Joan of Arc. But I'm going to go because the Rats and People Motion Picture Orchestra are going to be accompanying the film, and I'm a big fan of them. They're a local group of very talented musicians who write film scores for silent films. I've worked with them on a couple of projects, and that will be introduced by Andrew Wyatt, who is in our St. Louis Film
Critics
Association. Mm-hmm. So that is Saturday night at 7:30, and then Sunday night is Rififi. Rififi was directed by Jules Dawson, who's actually an American director who was blacklisted and went to France and made this film. It's considered like the granddaddy of heist films. It's sort of similar to The Asphalt Jungle, about a heist and I think it's diamonds they steal. I haven't seen it in a while. Have you ever seen that one?
I've not seen that all the way through. Has that got Melina Mercury in it?
I don't think so.
Top Cappy, maybe.
Top Cappy was sort of a quasi-remake, with a lot of humor that was made a few years later, mm-hmm. also by Jules Dawson. Jules Dawson's one of the co-stars. I think it's just a bunch of French actors. It's very clever.
They've had a good turnout. I went to Sunday's showing of La Cage aux Folles, and Kate Marquis introduced it. And from what I've been told by Cliff over at Cinema St. Louis, the audiences have been
That's
really
good, because historically this film festival has not gotten big audiences. But they had a great lineup of films this year.
They did. They really did.
And speakers. And did people ask questions to Kate when the movie was over?
There was a really great discussion. I mean, and we also talked about Birdcage, the American version. So, I think so. Yeah,
that's important. I mean, to me, it's important to have these discussions after these films, I think.
The crowd skewed a little younger, so I'm not sure how many people actually had seen La Cage aux Folles before. But it's a good example of cinema from the time. Really funny script. It still plays really well.
And I'm still trying to get Cliff to show Rider on the Rain with Charles Bronson at the Classic French Film Festival. I will bug him until he does that.
Do that.
I will. And then Rififi, I think I failed to mention, will be introduced and discussed by our friend Diane Carson.
Yes.
Oh, and she's always interesting to listen to. Mm-hmm. So that's the Classic French Film Festival. I can't think of anything else going on in town. We did see Videodrome Friday night. That was the premiere of the Late Night Grindhouse's new venue, the Moolah. Jim had never been to the Moolah. How about those comfy chairs, Jim?
Oh, my gosh. I was in shock when I sunk down into one of them there. And I was good heavens, it's quicksand.
I know. I wonder how many people fell asleep. I bet they probably get a more percentage of people falling asleep.
Oh, I did. I fell asleep for probably a good 10 minutes.
Oh. Oh, no, I'd made it through the whole thing, but I was just pleased I was able to get up from out of that comfy plush chair.
Yeah.
And love seat.
Videodrome's age, sort of interestingly. You know, that was made in 83. I think last year I said 88, and I was mistaken. But it's right when they were doing a lot of these sort of bladder special effects. Rick Baker came in before CGI, and so you have a lot of this stuff where James Wood's stomach is opening up, and he's pulling a gun out of it, and, you know, people's heads pop open, and snakes come out, and things like that. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was. Very effective.
Oh, yeah.
And next month he's showing one of my very, very, very favorite movies, Rolling Thunder, directed by John Flynn and written by Paul Schrader and starring William Devane and Tommy Lee Jones. That's, I think, April 8th and 9th or something
like
that.
Talk me into it.
Oh, it's amazing. That's such a great movie. Oh, that's also the weekend that the Tivoli will be premiering this year's Midnight Series. But they'll be premiering that with Rocky Horror Picture Show. I host the Midnight Series at the Tivoli, but I do not host when they do Rocky Horror Picture Show, which is fine with me because I can head over to the Moolah and see
Rolling Thunder. Yes.
A couple of movies we're going to see this week. Well, I'm not going to see it. Divergent? Anybody in this room going to see Divergent?
No.
No.
You're Divergent. Divergence threaten the system.
She's gonna kill me.
I'm not gonna let that happen.
Oh, okay, Michael Hafner is going to see Divergent tomorrow night.
So much love for that.
And tonight we're seeing, is it called Everybody Wants Some? Is that the name?
Yeah, Everybody Wants Some.
Okay, that is Richard Linklater's new film, but it doesn't open for about 5 more weeks, so we probably won't be reviewing it for at least a couple of weeks. And I'm supposed to review a couple of the young stars from that film, but I don't know who's in this film.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw the trailer for it. I didn't really recognize any of these young actors, but I'm not very hip, so that's not too much of a surprise. Also, what about this Midnight Special? That opens Friday, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, that does?
That's Michael.
That's Michael Shannon. Kirsten Dunst.
Yeah,
it's from the director of Mud.
Yes.
And Take Shelter.
But they're not. There's no screenings.
It's got mixed reviews.
Yeah, it's about a little boy with magical powers, and he and his father go on the run. Oh, well, maybe one of us will see it.
I want to see it just for Michael Shannon.
Okay. Michelle's going to go see it, so she can review that.
I'm hoping I do.
Next time we gather here for the We Are Movie Geeks podcast.
Michael Shannon is just one of those enigmatic actors that, you know, he can anything.
Yeah,
I see that he's in it. And I
and
really
he elevates bad films.
Exactly. Thank you.
Like, yes. What was The Night Before? What awful movie that was.
But last week, Jim and I
saw... What
did
you
say?
About Thursday? Oh, yeah.
Well,
I was in screenings all day Thursday, and then I came home to the internet almost being broken.
Exactly.
From the new teaser for Captain America Civil War.
Okay. That's enough. Captain, people are afraid. That's why I'm here. We need to be put in check. Whatever form that takes, I'm getting.
And this was a real shock. They've been, this way you have teasers or trailers.
Trailers.
Been teasing another superstar from the Marvel lineup appearing finally in a Marvel Studios film. I was talking with a couple of our other critic friends, and I thought, well, they're going to save his appearance until after the film opens, and they'll do that to sort of jazz up the box office after the original opening weekend. But instead, we got to see Spider-Man, finally.
Yes.
And that was quite a cause for celebration.
Oh, you knew he was going to be in it.
No, he's not, but I didn't think they'd let us see it.
We were wondering, Jim and I were wondering, and everyone else, was Marvel going to let us see it? I mean, see him. And the way that they intro him with
Spider-Man. Well, it's a good teaser anyway without Spider-Man. I mean, there's some scenes we've seen before.
It's a fantastic trailer.
There's a wonderful sequence in which Captain America and Iron Man are having a throwdown. And Iron Man says something to the effect is, are you going to give up? And Cap says, I can do this all day, which mentions the great line from the first Captain America film, which was terrific. We see a quick sequence of Ant-Man hitching a ride on one of Hawkeye's arrows.
That was great.
Which is terrific. And then they go to the final, you know, title, and then you see Iron Man saying something to the effect
Underoos.
Of, well, you know, he says, well, you've tested my patience for the last time. I've got no choice. underoos, and webbing comes down to snatch Captain America's shield away. And it's revealed to be Spider-Man.
And Spider-Man, you know, in a very young voice, which we were really pleased about. He's like, hey, everyone.
Yeah. Hi, everyone.
Oh, it's so great.
And I was like,
great.
He's a kid in it. There were some complaints online. Why has he got Justin Bieber's voice? And I was like, well, no, he's supposed to be 15 or 16 years old. And I hate to say that that Tobey Maguire, who I enjoyed as Spider-Man, and Andrew Garfield were pushing 30 when they put on the outfit. And the outfit here is quite a different take on it also. So I've heard that that it's digital, actually. Mm-hmm. It's similar to what they did with Ryan Reynolds with the Green Lantern a few years ago, but it looks a lot better. And they're not doing that sort of silver-raised webbing. It looks closer to the comic book illustrations. And the spider emblem itself is very small, and we saw a little bit of it looks like he's going to be using a mechanical web shooter because it looks like there's ink cartridges on his belt. I'm very, very happy of it. There's some speculation that Tony Stark did some tech work on his suit because his eyes, the white of his eyes is able to expand and contract.
Right.
And I think that's because there's camera lenses in there.
Well, this is being directed by Anthony and Joe Russo, and Kevin Feige, of course, is producing. So, I mean, for superhero fans, we've got Batman, Superman in March. We have Captain America, Civil War, April 27th, and we have X-Men.
April 27th? What? I thought it was May 6th. What? They've upped it?
Wait a minute. I think that Captain America is April 27th?
That's what
I
thought.
Or is that when they're releasing
it
in England?
Yeah, I think they're. I think overseas they're getting it a little sooner. And then May 18th is
X-Men. I'm sure they'll show it to us.
X-Men Apocalypse.
May 18th, is that soon after Civil War?
Yeah,
huh?
So I'm saying the next 3 months.
Yeah, the Russos did such a wonderful job with Winter Soldier, and I believe they're going to be doing the upcoming Avengers Infinity Gauntlet.
But the thing that you and I were talking about last week was what the possible stinger at the end, the tease at the very end of Civil War will be. And we're hoping
that it's going to be a certain Sorcerer Supreme, certain Mr. Cumberbatch as a good doctor all love.
Yep, okay. Doctor Strange. So we're hoping.
So, but it might be something with Thanos again. Who knows?
So much to look forward to this summer.
Yes. We finally looked at got a look at the Ghostbusters trailer the week before.
Oh yes,
too,
we did.
So.
Yeah, I'm kind of getting. I was one of the naysayers from the get go, but I'm starting to acquiesce. I think
it really looks close to the original 84. We even see Slimer in it. I was really surprised at that.
Right.
So
my name is Erin Gilbert, Doctor of Particle Physics. That stuff went everywhere, by the way, in every crack. Very hard to wash off.
We have dedicated our whole lives to studying the paranormal. Now there's sightings all over the city.
But I like the dynamic of the four stars, you know, and they've got Chris Hemsworth, you know, taking on the Annie Potts role.
Yeah. So could be fun.
All right. And we'll be reviewing all of those movies here at the We Are Movie Geeks podcast, but we're going to have to wrap it up for this week. Next week, we'll be back, but it will be a best of show because we won't really be back.
Because
that's okay.
We need a break.
That's right. Yeah.
Oh, should we give a heads up or a hi to one of our listeners that we met at a screening a couple of weeks ago?
Oh.
Matt?
Oh, Matt.
Hope you enjoyed the show, Matt. Nice to see you.
All right, Matt. But we will be back in 2 weeks to review Batman versus Superman. So that's kind of exciting.
And we're all seeing that.
Yeah, and then maybe Midnight Special. We can review that if one of us sees it.
And I'll be talking about that Greek wedding, too.
Oh, there you go.
And I'll be getting the rice out of my hair from it.
But for now, I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Jim Batts.
And stay tuned for more episodes of the We Are Movie Geeks podcast.
Black leather, rock. Black leather,
ta-ta-ta.
Black leather.
Oh, nice, Dave. Hello, darling.
Black leather, rock, hip, hip, hip. I got that feeling, black leather, rock. Black leather, smash, smash, smash. Black leather, kill. I got that feeling, black leather, rock. Crash. Black leather, kill. I got that feeling, black leather, rock.
Forward into battle, there, chaps.
Hello. 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 H